Welcome back to the 90 Minute School Day podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Edwards, and I'm so very glad you're here. Today's episode is one I've been genuinely looking forward to for a long time. Our guest is Judy Arnell, an internationally recognized child development specialist, best-selling author, and mother of five self-directed learners. Judy has spent years reviewing research, teaching at the university level, and consulting with thousands of homeschooling families. She is the author of Unschooling to University, and she's here today to talk about what children actually need to thrive, why the traditional education model may be working against them, and how unschooling can be a real, research-backed path all the way to university and beyond. In this episode, we talk about the neuroscience of chronic stress and burnout, what the research actually says about screens, and three intentional years that can prepare a teen for post-secondary, and so much more. If you have a child recovering from educational trauma, a teenager who's done with traditional schooling, or you're just curious whether this path can really work, this conversation is especially for you. So let's dive in. School is out. Natural learning is in. Hey there, I am Kelly Edwards, your host of this podcast and creator of the 90 Minute School Day. This is not your typical homeschooling podcast. Here, you will find out-of-the-box stories from the trenches, trainings, tools, and tips to guide you forward. Yes, I like alliteration. We will also share results and mindset shifts to support you in your journey of living and learning alongside your out-of-the-box neurodiverse kids. I'm so glad you're here.
So welcome, everybody, to Day in the Life. We are so thrilled to be here with Judy Arnell tonight, and she is here to talk mainly about her book, which you can see here, Unschooling to University. And that is a topic that I know I'm excited about, and I imagine you are as well, because one of the biggest fears we have as parents doing the non-mainstream thing, so we don't have at least one of our kids, maybe all of our kids in the school system, we're homeschooling, but actually we're unschooling. So saying unschooling to university can kind of feel maybe like a little bit of an oxymoron. And we're going to be here to dispel myths. Judy's going to give us a huge confidence boost and really help guide us. So we'll be talking, Judy and I will be talking, and then we will do a Q&A after this. So without further ado, let me introduce you to Judy. Judy Arnell is an internationally recognized child development specialist, speaker, and best-selling author. Judy has taught family communication and child development courses for years at institutions, including continuing education programs at the University of Calgary and Alberta Health. She is the author of Unschooling to University and parent of five self-directed learners who have successfully navigated their own education paths. Today, she's here to share her research-backed insights on how unschooling can lead to real-world success, all while honoring, here's the kicker, curiosity, play, and relationships. And I really just, Judy, thank you so much for being here. I really just wanted to point out before I forget that kind of like tagline underneath your book title is that relationships matter most in a world crammed with content. So welcome.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, we're so excited to have you. And so we're going to just dive right in. What we typically do is we will have everybody kind of introduce themselves to you in the chat so you can start to get a feel for who's here live with us. And those listening later can also get a feel for that. And then I will go ahead and introduce myself to give you a little bit of time with our icebreaking prompt. But everybody, if you can go ahead and start introducing yourself in the chat with your name, ages of your kids, and the location, and then answer our ice-breaking question. It comes in two parts tonight, but the first one's really easy. So the first question is, on a scale of 1 to 5, how confident do you feel about navigating high school without a traditional path? So 1 to 5, 1 being like, I'm freaking out, help. 5 is like, I've got this. I'm just here for support tonight. So go ahead and fill that out. And then if you would like, we would love to know what worries you most about the phrase unschooling to university. So if you guys can get the chat going and keep it active tonight, that will be great. And so I'll introduce myself and then kick it over to Judy to answer these questions as well. My name is Kelly Edwards. I have 3 kiddos. They are 17, 11, and 8. We live in the Shenandoah Valley here in West Virginia in the United States. And on a scale of 1 to 5, how confident do you feel about navigating high school without a traditional path? I would say right now I'm a 5, but I was definitely a 1 when I first started homeschooling. And what worried me most at the time with the phrase unschooling to university was just like, what even is that? I already kind of mentioned it. Younger me would have been like, that's an oxymoron. How does that even work? So that's me. Judy, do you mind introducing yourself and answering these questions?
Sure. I'm Judy. My kids now, I have 5 kids. They range in age from, 23 to 33. And I'm in Calgary, Canada. And on a scale of 1 to 5, how confident do I feel about navigating high school? Now it's a 5, but when I started with my oldest, not probably 0. And what worries me most is I really struggled with the title of the book just because, well, I'll explain later why I titled it that, but everybody I knew who unschooled went into arts and became entrepreneurs. And I, as all our friends started applying to universities, I thought, oh, there's other pathways out there. So I wanted to include that. So I don't know. It seems to fit.
I love that. And I love that you brought that nuance of at the time that your kiddos were kind of moving through high school and into university, a lot of the unschoolers you knew went into the arts, which I think is an interesting thing. So we'll have to definitely dig into that later. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that you were at a 0. So we have a new number to put out there for those of you who haven't entered in the chat. I'm going to read just a few of our parents who are chiming in the chat just for you to get a feel of the audience. 2 kids, 12 and 8 in Western Washington. We have another parent chiming in from Mexico, Missouri. Daughter's 8, and we're going to include some diagnoses here, PDA and ADHD. She is 1 on a 1 of the scale of 1 to 5 in confidence about navigating high school. And what worries her most is being behind others that are the same ages as her children. We have another parent chiming in. Her kids are 11 and 8 from St. Paul, Minnesota, and she's at a 2. She's concerned about having adequate records. Okay, perfect. Another parent, 9 and 11, Chicago, and she's at a 1, even navigating any schooling right now. Okay, so she's coming out of burnout with her kiddo. Another parent, 2 girls, ages 8 and 9, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We're at a 3 in readiness, as I'm not really there. Okay, I love that. I love that honesty there. You're not there right now, so you're feeling kind of good at a 3, trusting you'll get there. I'm not really worried unless they think they need to go to university. Okay. And then we've got a parent with an 8-year-old son, San Antonio, Texas, and the worry is providing enough learning opportunities since we're mostly homebound right now. The next one's the last one I'm going to read just for the sake of time. We've got a parent from San Francisco Bay Area with an 11-year-old son, and she feels very unconfident and uncertain about how this unschooling journey leads back to a more traditional path like high school and university. So, Judy, that's a little bit of who we've got here. You and I will keep an eye on the chat because we'll definitely be in this a little bit later as we go into Q&A. But for now, will you just kind of kick us off on sharing a little bit about your family's learning journey and also your professional background, especially your work around research and consulting thousands of homeschooling families. So if you don't mind kind of giving us that backstory and then kind of tag it all up with a nice bow of what led you to write this book.
Okay, I'll try and be succinct. So I got into parent education work, and I would teach parents about brain development, child development, and mostly non-punitive parenting. And then I had kids, and we started off in school. My two oldest boys went to school for grades 2 and grade 1. And I was really dismayed at such an authoritarian framework it was. It was very much, very, very authoritarian. Where at home, we were more collaborative, democratic parenting, and that's what I taught. And I, too, had a son who had ADHD. He had working memory issues, didn't read, and he was heading into grade 3. I had 3 boys who were very late readers, like grade age 8, age 9, age 10. And I could answer more questions about that. But, and then I decided, you know, I'm going to, then my husband went to work for 2 years in Peru. And I had 4 kids. And I said, all right, we're doing school my way. Cause you know, the kids hate school. They hated going. They would cling to the door jams and I'd be pulling them, trying to drive them all to school every day. And I thought, this is not working. So I pulled them out. And like many parents, I took the school model and brought it home. And that lasted 2 months because, as we know, kids, you have a love relationship with your kids. Teachers don't. So they stopped listening to you. Mine did. And we weren't getting any of the school curriculum done. We were all in tears. And I had a 5-year-old at that time and a toddler underfoot. And I thought, we got less and less schoolwork done, curriculum done. And we slid more into unschooling. And then for the next 10 years, we played. We played, we did projects. The kids had way too much screen time. And I wrote a couple books on non-punitive parenting. And then it was great until the day my oldest turned 15 and we had to make decisions about high school. And that was my neurodivergent child, although I have 3 of them who struggle with anxiety at times. So we're all over. So then we did self-directed high school for what they wanted to go into, you know, and by that time, you know what your kids are excited about, where their interests are, what they might want to do for the world of work. So we did that. We got the courses they needed to go into what programs, and then they all went off to university. And well, the 3 oldest, I had 3 kids under 3, so they were kind of like a team going through things together. And then as our unschooling friends, they too started getting more serious about what they wanted to do, get the qualifications they need. They went off to, got admitted to different programs through college, through university, through tech schools and art schools. And I thought, well, you know, I got to write a book on this because everybody worries about later. You know, we're all, and I did too. I had my bad days. I had a good support team across Canada through Yahoo groups, but it needs to get out there. So I wrote the book just as much for teachers as well as parents and school leaders. And that's how I got to the book. Yeah. So now I have 1 child who's an engineer working not in engineering. He was always a hacker. He was my screen time addict. That kid was playing 12 hours of video games when he was 7. It was bad. He is now into cybersecurity for a video game manufacturer. And then I have a nurse, a registered nurse. I have a child who's going into education to be a teacher, and he swears he's never going to teach in the system. And then I have a child who got a degree in English and then went on to do a master's. And then I have a child who I think is kind of on the autism spectrum. He did 2 years university and quit. He hated it. And now he plays piano and enjoys piano playing. So yeah, that's my story.
And you're sticking to it. I love that. I love hearing about your all's life. And it's so real. Thank you for sitting down with us and telling us all the dirty details. Like, yes, my 7-year-old did 12 hours of screen time. And he's now in cybersecurity. And he's thriving, right? He's doing just fine. You have an RN, you have a teacher, you have these kids that have self-directed their education and they're self-directing their lives. And I just really appreciate, and I know everyone does here, hearing about what that looked like. So we'll get more into, you guys, if you have questions that are popping up in your head, put them in the chat now. We'll collect them and do it in the Q&A if you want to know more about what Judy's homeschool looked like. And then I think it's a beautiful marriage to have you come and talk to us about this topic, A, because you wrote such a fabulous book, but also your background in parenting and non-punitive parenting, which I think really is the gold standard. And it's something that is radically new, at least for most of us. We've had, all of us here have made some really big shifts in our parenting because you just, it's kind of like how you talked about, you came home and started homeschooling with curriculum and for 2 months and then finally had to just like slide into unschooling. Whereas it's similar in parenting, you do what the parenting style you were parented with. That's just sort of the natural things. Did you want to say anything about that before we kind of dig into the unschooling about punitive parenting or anything about how that kind of dovetails in unschooling?
Yeah, I mean, I really do promote non-punitive parenting, but that doesn't mean that we didn't provide structure in our unschooling or we didn't have routines or the kids didn't do chores. It just meant that when they pushed back and said, no, I'm not doing this, then we talk about it. We come up with some solutions that meet both our needs. I would never say, well, I'm the parent, you just have to do it, because that doesn't work out well. So, especially when you have really spirited kids who are going to go to the wall and do what they want. So yeah, it's had lots of challenges, but I think it made the teen years super easy. And we all have really good relationships right now.
That's awesome. Thank you for the right now, because it does fluctuate, right? As we move through life, our relationships fluctuate. Thank you for naming that. So let's dig into kind of like more about the topic at hand. From, you mentioned play, that you guys played for 10 years. So from a developmental perspective, what do children and teens need most for healthy growth and learning? And how does that foundation ultimately prepare them for adult life and even university?
So what they need most is unstructured time. And you're giving it to them if you're unschooling. And when I say unstructured, and the experts say this too, is that unstructured is not soccer lessons or piano lessons, or it's time the kids can do whatever they want and fiddle with what their passion is at that moment. So time, and then also what you can give them right now is anything that's available in your house. So if you do not need a whole lot of supplies, I have supply lists in my book that's crazy, but a lot of stuff I'd offer to the kids, they didn't want it. Board games, arts and crafts supplies. Sometimes they wanted access to the sewing machine or the workshop or things like that. And that willingness to let them explore their interests. So facilitating their learning, their interests, but not being in that position of teaching. Unless, of course, they want you to teach. You know, if your specialty is astronomy and you just want to share that passion with your child, go for it, for sure. But not all of us do that, right? We don't have those talents or interests. So to recap, I'd say time, unstructured time, and just whatever you got around your house, access to books, to the internet, anything that would satisfy their curiosity.
That's beautiful. And so with having an abundant, and I like how you phrased, like, give them access to whatever's in your house. And if it's the sewing machine or the tools, facilitate that. Give them access, grant access, give them a lot of unstructured time so that they can kind of like figure things out and you're there to assist. So how does that, raising a child in that atmosphere, how does that prepare them for adult life and university should they choose?
Well, I think it allows them freedom to discover their interests, for sure, right? Allowing my son unfettered computer time gave him the ability to really dive into coding, to hacking, to you know, he was exploring the dark web at 13 that I didn't know about. But those are skills he needed for going into what he was going into. So allowing kids, I hate to say allow, but empowering them to pursue their interests, whatever it may be. For a five-year-old, what that looks like is they get to go through your cupboards and make potions, you know, for their potion shop. For a 10-year-old, maybe it's having them have a pet and they learn pet care and animal needs. And they're learning through all these things. They're learning math, they're learning English, they're learning science, they're a little bit of social studies through all those things. For a teenager, it may be like give them the sewing machine, or the for a 16-year-old, it may be, let me show you how to use the workshop, right? Now, there is safety and supervision built into that too, but never saying no unless, you know, it's midnight and they want to experiment with fire. You know, maybe that's a no until the next day.
I love that. Yes. So it's saying yes. It's having a yes day every day as much as you can, couching it with safety, of course, and lots of conversations about like fantastic idea, but it is midnight and fire is not something that we're going to do tonight just because people need their rest and blah, blah, blah. But we can put that on the schedule for another evening earlier in the night. So I love that. And we can really see how children, and I love the word empowerment. So we're empowering children to discover who they are, to discover their passions, to gain all these skills. Mm-hmm. And so looking at it that way, what would you say, in your perspective, is the problem, the central problem today with modern education or like typical conventional classroom education?
I am so glad you gave me that question ahead of time, because I really had to think about that. and my child, who's into teaching right now, we have a lot of conversations about this, but I would say it's the subtitle of my book. It's the fact that teachers have very little time. They have so much pressure to get all this curriculum, you know, just open up those kids' heads and fill all these facts and figures and information in, and they don't have the time to develop the relationship, which you do. That is the biggest advantage of home education, whether you're unschooling or choosing a more structured curriculum. You are building a relationship more than building that resume, right? That is what's going to give your kids a strong, strong adulthood. And then there's curriculum. And I tell parents, you look at your little seven-year-old right now, and you can't really fast forward and see how much they're going to take active part in their learning later on when they're able to access resources. You know, they might willingly at 13 go to Khan Academy and one day want to decide how to factor polynomials on their own. It's not something that we'd want to teach, but it's something they'd want to learn. And they can access these things and through their curiosity, understand and persevere and learn them. And we underestimate how much their ability is to do those things.
So. Yeah, I really appreciate how you just walked us through some really tangible examples of what things look like for a seven-year-old versus a 13-year-old, and how development works, and how we as a society do not give children enough credit, and there isn't a lot of empowerment to children. So everything you're saying is really resonating with me and the parents here live with us tonight. And I think this goes into what's so fascinating about when we think about unschooling to university. In your book, you were talking, I loved this, you were saying, earlier, you said you guys played for 10 years. And then in your book, you say you only need 3 years, 3 intentional years, you said, to prepare for university. And that right now, whoever's listening is challenging people's thoughts. Like, well, what do you mean? We're just going to play and you only need 3 years to get ready for university? So can you help explain this paradigm shift and kind of break it down for us?
Sure. Yeah. So all my kids played. Now, 4 of them went into STEM careers, right? Science, technology, engineering, mathematics. So at grade 8, they all took a grade 8 math course. That was their very first introduction to school, other than, you know, going to school in grade 1, 2 and not doing anything there. But they took grade 8 and then they skipped grade 9. And then at grade 10 is 15 in Canada. They have enough brain development. Their prefrontal cortex is developed. They can think abstractly, theoretically. That's when they can really, really learn how to do their first essay. Now, it's not like they haven't written since they were 2 years old. They have been writing, but they needed to learn how to write to the schools wanting them to write, right? So parents ask me, how did they learn 8 grades of math in grade 8? And I said, they're not starting from grade 1 when they're 13 in grade 8 and learning grade 8 math. They're learning math through their play, through their video gaming, through their projects. They learn math. Grade 8 was the first year they learned it, how to do it on paper, how to add fractions, how to subtract decimals, things like that. Yeah, it was a big year for them, but they had the brain power at age 13 to do that, right? And then take another year off and then start a high school program. Now, some of my kids didn't do all of high school. They left with the bare standards they could leave with. Others did more high school courses that they really liked. And in Canada, high school is kind of a buffet of courses. And what a lot of unschoolers do is they get to age 17 and they look at what they want to do for a career. Do they want to go to art school? Do they want to become an engineer? Do they want to go into humanities, right? And then they work backwards and see what courses they need to go off and get post-secondary education they need, right? And just like adult upgrading, there's many ways to get that qualifications they need to apply. They can go to adult upgrading school, they can challenge exams, they can write the SATs, they can many, many ways they can go and then apply. So, and kids by that time are very motivated. And that's the other thing. You need kids on your side if they want to do this. If they don't want to do this, and four of my kids all wanted to go try out school at some point in time, whether it was grade 3 or grade 10. They tried it out. They liked some things. They hated other things. And then they all decided to come home again. And then I thought when they started university, I thought, oh no, they're going to go for 2 weeks. I'm going to pay this big bill and they're going to quit. Well, they didn't. University was a lot different. It was a lot more adulthood, a lot more geared to customer service than high school was, right? High school is, they're still being parented. So they didn't like that aspect. So yeah, kids. And the other thing I want to talk about here is the big thing kids need to know is math and English. Okay. Those are tools to learn other things. Kids need to know how to write. They need to know how to read. And yeah, they can start that at age 15. They don't have to start in kindergarten, really. Not really. Math, those are tools that build. And like I said, you know, the kids can learn math through everyday concepts and then start the paper math anywhere from age 13 to 15 if they're going into a more high math career. Social studies, history, science, geography, those are all location specific subjects, right? What we teach in Canada for social studies is a lot different than what you may teach, your schools may teach down there. So it's very location specific. And kids can pick that up as their interests come pretty well.
Thank you for breaking that down for us, because I think it's really helpful. And I also really appreciated how you were talking about, because this has been my experience with my kids as well, is their math skills are incredible. My kids' math skills, all 3 of them, their math skills are incredible because for my oldest, she and I did like the homeschool at home business initially. But then once we dropped math, she didn't do math for years. And then when she returned to it, she was doing it under her own steam, her own interest. And mm-hmm. I love what you said about how developmentally at 13, now they can manage abstract concepts. And in your book, you broke it down even further, talking about this is when they are kind of excited for everything that they know. They're like, oh, cool. I can translate the fractions I can do in my head. And it's kind of fun. It's like a little puzzle versus having it drilled into them for years and they're burnt out because they don't need all this repetition. If you've got it, you've got it. You don't need to keep showing up every year, you know, multiplying fractions.
Exactly. And a lot of the kids are very well read because they read for fun, right? Nothing kills fun reading than having to do a book report. So like you said, they're gearing up for those years of learning more about high school topics rather than burning out. Very much so.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So we're kind of getting the picture here about how kids play. You said in your book, I wrote it down, that play is the key to university. And the motivation they have in play is the passion they need to direct their education. I just thought that was beautiful. And so let's talk about play and stress. Our audience here are parents with kids who are neurodiverse, many of whom have suffered from educational trauma in the classroom. And you do a great job in your book talking about learning and stress and play and how those kind of work together in a way. And so can you help us understand, for those of us listening, when a child has been living in chronic stress, what's going on neurologically and how does play and felt safety reopen that capacity to learn? Do you mind kind of walking us through that?
Sure. So when kids live under stress, whether it's stress-induced at school, and there are stress that's ongoing is not very good for the brain. It stimulates that HPA axis where the hypothalamus, the pituitary, the adrenal all work together to raise the cortisol level in the body. And the cortisol level, the cortisol kind of disconnects those connections between the prefrontal cortex and the hippocampus. And what that does is it shuts down learning. So when kids are under stress, they can't learn. So a child who goes to school and is bullied, and that's ongoing stress. Toxic stress is never ends. It's ongoing and it continually puts that kid's body in high alert producing cortisol, which is absolutely not good for brain development. So when kids are in a safe environment, which is at home, you know, you can really reduce bullying. I'm not saying bullying doesn't occur in home education circles, does, but it's a much smaller little piece. And it's mitigated by caring adults, right? That can step in and do something. There's not the stress of exams or pressure. I'm not saying that's toxic stress, but I'm saying that why not put it off until kids are older and can handle it a bit better? Right? You can walk through self-talk and walk through them, those stressors. So yeah, for kids to be able to relax, just feed their curiosity at home through play. Play is super relaxing for kids. More kids need play. That's one thing that's missing for kids that go to school. They don't have time to play. But giving kids play at all age groups. And I'll warn you, about age 12, 13, play for kids starts to go more online. Just saying. So we know, video games and YouTube. But it's good for them, right? And I tell parents, you can err on the side of nurturing. Absolutely. And that's what kids need to mitigate those stressors. Err on the side of nurturing. Don't err on the side of authoritarianism, because that can just reignite that trauma and stress from before.
Thank you for that. I like how you were like, err on the side of nurturing. Like, if you're going to have errors in your parenting, may it be because you are nurturing and nourishing and focused on connection with your kids as an intention, rather than trying to incentivize or control them. You know, that's Kelly's translation.
Or make sure that they understand the curriculum. Let it go. Let it go. They can learn fractions later on, but, you know, build your relationship. And for you to be nurturing, you have to do self-care too.
Yes. You know, thank you for saying that.
We have to feed ourselves too.
Yes, it does. So what I heard from you just now is that I really wanted to just repeat, just because it was so good, was that toxic stress, and this is what has happened to a lot of us who have children who are PDAers. So they're pathologically demand avoidant. That's their neurotype. School is not built for them. They have layered amounts of stresses. Some of them could be toxic stress, like maybe there was a bullying or this child has test anxiety or whatever. It could be sensory stress. It's building up in their nervous system. And I loved how you said, wait till they're older. When their nervous system is more equipped and more mature to be able to manage, because that's one of the things you pointed out, because you were talking in your book about ACEs scores, which is adverse childhood experiences, if anyone's not familiar what that is. And that can come from a myriad of different things, but like educational trauma is certainly going to ping your ACEs score. And what that does is it like affects the development of the prefrontal cortex. So it's delaying development. And so these kids need even more time to kind of have their brain reintegrate. Did I understand that correctly?
That's right. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Because ACEs can come, they can come from family, and they can also come from environment in schools too, for sure. Yeah. And all kids need really is one caring adult who's in their corner, right?
Thank you for that. Yes.
And that's what's missing in school is teachers, even if the teacher's a caring adult, they don't have the time to build that relationship and be nurturing. They got to get curriculum done. You don't have to. And there's no finish line. Kids, you know, they can start high school at age 18. They can start at 25 if they want to. They won't have to do all the prerequisites. They're not going to make them do all that. But if they want those grade 12 courses, they can do them at any time. There's no rush.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And I loved also how you were talking about, hey, play changes gears. When they get to be about 13, they go online more with their play, which, hello, I'm here to say that I really enjoy what we're doing right now, and it's a form of play for me. I'm learning, I'm connecting with you all, and we're all online. So that makes sense too. I like to scroll social media with the best of us until I'm like, why am I even doing this with my life? So, and gaming, et cetera. So with that in mind, many unschooling kids and teens, because they have a lot of unstructured time and resources around the house, like computers and tablets and all the screens, they're spending their time on gaming, YouTube, TV, digital communities, etc. So can you talk to us a little bit about what the research says on screens and how parents can think about technology that is different from the cultural narrative in self-directed education?
Yeah, I get that question all the time. And I and parents who homeschool are all over the map on that, right? Just as parents in classrooms, kids. So there's the limiters on this end, the extreme limiters, and then there's the unlimiters on this end, which is me, and everybody in between. So it really is dependent on how much you can stand your kids online. But I'm just going to say for the learning, I have a whole chapter in my book on, I am a big fan of video games. My kids have learned so much through playing video games. Even certain social media apps like Reddit, you know, they learned a lot of how to write through Reddit, arguing points. And they learned quickly that if you want to sound like you're credible, you've got to learn proper grammar and spelling. And it's from them. It's not me saying you have to do this. It's them wanting to do it, wanting to learn how to write. So it was a great motivator. YouTube, really good stuff on there. And I don't separate educational videos into or the junk. I think all of it's learning. My kids play Grand Theft Auto. They learn stuff. We always had open communication. So if they came across something they didn't quite understand that was more adult content, I'd explain it to them and they would get educated that way. The one part that, I mean, isn't very good for mental health is probably social media, right? Mm-hmm. There's the social media, there is not nice people on. It can be very demoralizing and bad for mental health. I'm lucky in that my kids were not big social media users. They're still not. I'm banned from, I can't post anything about my kids on social media. And I love to, like, I'd love to show you my kids' essay progression, you know, through unschooling. I'd love to show all that stuff and I can't, not allowed. But I would really monitor your kids on how they're doing on social media just for their mental health. But I allow free rein on video games. I think they are so educational.
Thank you so much. I love hearing that. I loved you naming, one of the parents in the chat said, so appreciate you naming the learning in Grand Theft Auto. So thank you for, again, like giving us a peek behind the curtain into what has really helped your kids. I love that you added in the open communication because that's so important. It's not, all of us would love to keep our kids away from anything dangerous and traumatic that will ever happen to them, but that's not realistic. So it's not when, it's not if, it's when, right? They're going to encounter these things. And I love that you said grammar can be taught on Reddit. To present your case, you must be able to type grammatically correct. I love that. It's such a great mindset shift right there. So thank you for that question. I want to get to Q&A. I know parents want to talk to you, but I did have two more questions I just want to get to because I think they're so important and will lend to even more questions in the Q&A. So what parents do, and I say this as a parent, is we often feel an intense urge to do something. We want to sign our kid up for an enrichment class or some kind of activity. We might just feel the urge that, oh, maybe now I can add curriculum, or, and not saying that curriculum's bad, but like we just have this need to do things, or we need to strew more strategically, and then the child will engage if they're into something else, especially kids in burnout. How can parents discern when their urge to act is coming from anxiety versus facilitation? Can you kind of help parse that apart for us?
That's a tough one to do because I know I have been there, and it comes from, you know, a lot of it comes from hanging out with parents of school kids. You know, your sister may come in and test your kids if they know the alphabet and they don't, and then you start feeling bad and then you go more strict. Or, you know, you go to a curriculum fair at a homeschooling conference and you feel overwhelmed by all the stuff you're not giving your kids. Stay away from the curriculum fairs. Don't talk to those relatives who test your kids. Find a support group that is unschooling focused, and they will reassure you to look at your kids and see how they are progressing. You know, the thing about unschooling is you don't demand output, not like teachers in school. So it's very hard to measure your kids are progressing and they're learning things every day. They're learning something new, but we don't have that tangible physical assurance and results that they do in schools. And you have to get over that. You have to not demand that, right? But then you observe your kids and you can see those moments where they have an aha moment, or they come and ask you or show you something that, hey, look, I did add fractions on paper. I learned it through Khan Academy or whatever. Those moments, write them down. Take a picture of them to assure yourself that your kids are still learning, because they will surprise you, right? It's just very hard to trust the process. Definitely, I know. And ultimately, your kids are going to tell you. If you go overboard and bring home more curriculum and they don't like it, they're going to let you know.
Yes, they will.
It sucks. And your job is to say, okay, you know, I'm all for strewing. Strew as much as you want, but when your kids push back, listen to them.
Yes, I think that's beautiful. Thank you for affirming us and validating all these feelings, right? When they get quizzed, or some other kid that's in school like gets all these accolades for something schooly that they did, and your confidence is just in the toilet, or your kid is like, hey, you know, what are we doing wrong with our lives? You know, we can look at that as an opportunity to be like, hey, we can do that. We're here for that. If you want to do that because, you know, James did that or whatnot. So thank you for that. Thank you for naming the comparison trap. Thank you for naming that, like, looking for and increasing our observation in those moments is where we will spot the things that are going to regrow our confidence, and limiting ourselves from the exposure of those. So like, especially like back to school season, I know that that's a hard season for so many parents, because you just feel like you are not, like you said, going to the homeschooling conference and you seeing all the curriculum and all these things that all these parents are getting for their kids. And you feel like you're not being, you're lost your good mommy card. You're not getting them these things. They don't want it. They just want you, and they just want some unstructured time. So thank you, Judy. So the last question I have before we go to Q&A brings us back to unschooling to university. So we've done a really good job talking already about painting what unschooling looks like kind of from early childhood through the teen years, and especially high school. But I would just love to talk through practical avenues, because there are lots of avenues to take your unschooled child, if they want to go to university, that's outside of traditional paths. So do you mind just kind of like shedding a little bit of light and giving us a little bit of information on those different paths towards university?
Sure. And when you look at it, in Canada, an adult is 18 or 19 and considered a mature student at 21. So, you know, the brain still has growing to do. The experts are even saying now that kids' brains aren't developed until age 30. You know, 5 years ago it was 25. So they're still young at 20, 21, 19. They could easily apply as a mature student. Now, get over the fact that your kids probably aren't going to get into Ivy League schools like Harvard, probably not, you know, but they don't need to, really. They need what they need either to go to a college or wherever they want to go. You want to help them get to where they want to go, right? So they could apply as a mature student. They could take those grade 12 courses only if they need help. You could hire tutors for that. They can just challenge the exams if they're really strong in some subjects. My kids did a whole combination of that. They either did the course, or they did the, if it was a really challenging grade 12 course like calculus, we did hire tutors for when they did need it. But for the most part, if they have the motivation, they're going to work through the material and get the credential, right? They can also take upgrading at those colleges, universities. They love your money. They'll take your child and teach them high school chemistry for nursing, no problem. And definitely, you know, and every kid can write, you know, it's easy to learn the 5-paragraph essay. They're still teaching that in grade 12 in Canada. Mm-hmm. And the beauty is, here's the beauty for neurodivergent kids. I watched my oldest go to university, and then my youngest, and there's something like there's almost a 12-year span. And now with AI, writing is valued way less at universities, colleges, because it's so easy to get, you know, AI to write something. So now they're looking at other tangible ways of learning, like through oral recordings, through art, through dramatic presentations, through group presentations. So when I went to university, I had to write a 15-page essay. When my daughter went, and she was in English, she wrote 1,500 words. Nowadays, they're asking for like 500 words in university. I'm like, don't worry about writing. You know, things change, right? With AI, it's a lot more open and a lot more options for kids, especially kids that don't read very well, write very well. They're a big cohort right now. So yeah, I would say there's many pathways into where they want to get credentials. Trade schools usually only need math and a certain level of English. So work backwards. Decide when they get to the point of, you know, age 17 to 25 of what they want to do, work backwards, help them see what credentials they need and how the best way to get it.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for that encouragement. One of the things that I loved reading through your book was how you kept reminding us that they don't actually need a diploma to go to college. And it's like, yeah, you're right. They don't. That you get accepted to college before you've graduated, and they just need to see work that you meet the criteria they're looking for the acceptance to the college and that university, et cetera, et cetera. They're looking for SATs, ACTs. They're looking for all of these different avenues that when we really think about it, oh, it takes a lot of the pressure off because, again, it's about that paradigm that we're moving out of. We only know what we did. Most of us went, if we went to college, we went through some sort of traditional school, graduated high school, and went to college. So this fries our brain because it's something new. But you've just done such a great job of just letting us know where there is intention and motivation. There are so many avenues to acceptance in university, and they do just want our money. And they're very happy to accept our children. So I love that too. Again, the real talk. So thank you so much, Judy, for this conversation. And I know that I think we probably got plenty of questions in the chat. I'm going to go and look, I'll pull the questions. And then if anybody, I know that not all of us can speak because then our friends come and find us. But if anybody wants to unmic and talk to Julie directly while I get myself organized here, please go ahead and unmic and we'll have a casual conversation. We'll chat Q&A with Judy.
Before we wrap up with Judy, I want to quickly share something for those of you who are listening and wishing you had a place to explore conversations like this one more deeply with other parents. A few times a year, I open enrollment to Day in the Life, our private community for homeschooling parents who are navigating self-directed learning, de-schooling, and supporting their sensitive or neurodivergent kids. And guess what? Doors are opening next week. Inside Day in the Life, we gather each week on Zoom. And every month, one week includes a special guest like Judy. On our other weeks, together we unpack, reflect, and apply what's coming up in real life and the topic of the month. This month, our topic is self-determined futures. Some weeks our gathering is a workshop or a training, and some weeks it's a focused discussion or shared reflection. And once a month, we devote an entire gathering to open Q&A. What makes Day in the Life different is that parents aren't just learning from a speaker. We certainly do that. But we're learning all the time from one another. We compare notes, share our lived experience, and make sense of what self-directed learning actually looks like when the school system does not fit our kids. Enrollment opens 3 times a year, and the next opportunity is coming next week. Doors will be open from March 28th through 31st. So if you'd like to be the first to know when doors open, you can join the invite list by clicking on the link in the show notes. And if you're listening to this episode later, that's still the best place to sign up so you'll be notified the next time enrollment opens. Okay. Let's get back to the conversation and our final question for Judy.
Thank you so much, Judy, for your time and your expertise and your wisdom and just like nourishing our hearts and minds, washing away the anxiety. We'll have to replay this. I noticed that in the chat. But before we go, I have one final question for you, if you don't mind. For families of neurodivergent children like we have here, especially our families who have a kiddo that has experienced school trauma and is at home recovering from burnout, what hope can you offer about long-term outcomes?
Well, I always say you can't force a child to learn and you can't stop them from learning. So every child every day is going to learn something. May not be what you have want to learn, but they are going to learn something. And in a nurturing environment, it's going to be a lot of things. So your child's going to be who they're going to be, and they're going to be nice people, nice citizens. And they're going to follow their passions if you encourage that, right? So letting go of our agenda, helping them to shape their own agenda, they're going to be useful, lovely, wonderful citizens in that world. And yeah, and enjoy it. Don't worry so much right now because they're going to do fine. They really will. They have you. If you're here now, you're obviously concerned and looking for ways to support them. So you're going to be fine. They're going to be fine.
Thank you so much. That's so encouraging and it's so true. Enjoy them. I love that. Mm-hmm. And they're learning. You can't stop them from learning. We are biologically designed to learn. I love that. That's so beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Will you just go ahead and tell everyone where they can find you, Judy, if they want to connect with you after this? Where can they find you?
I have a website called Unschooling to University. I have a lot of articles on there, some you can listen to. And my email's on there. If you want to email me, I'm on Facebook. I'm way on social media too much. Mostly Facebook, not Instagram, because although I want to post pictures of my kids, I can't. So, yeah. And I welcome questions or whatever you want to talk about.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you for being here. There's a lot of thank yous in the chat. We just appreciate you so much. And I hope that you have a wonderful evening.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having me, Kelly. And I really enjoyed this. And thanks for reaching out. It was nice meeting you.
Very nice to meet you. And I loved your book. So I'm a big proponent of it. And it's a wonderful handbook, by the way. Like, I read it straight through, but then I was like going back because I was like, ooh, she said something about it. And you could read it by sections too, mm-hmm. I believe. And you probably wrote it that way. And so it is a really great resource to have on your shelf. And when you get nervous about technology and too much screen time, you can just go and read about how much screen time Judy's kids had. So, oh my goodness. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. We'll see everybody next week. And Judy, please take care.
Thanks. You. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you found this conversation with Judy Arnell as reassuring and expansive as I did. One of the most powerful ideas Judy shared is that learning does not have to follow a single prescribed path. When young people grow up with curiosity, autonomy, and meaningful relationships around them, they develop the very qualities that support lifelong learning. Whether that eventually leads to university, a trade, entrepreneurship, or something else entirely unexpected. And if this episode helped you shift your thinking about what the future can look like for your child, I'd love for you to share this episode with a friend or another parent who might also need to hear this encouraging conversation. Also, if you have a moment, please leave a review. It genuinely helps families like yours find the support offered in this show. All of Judy's links and information about her book, Unschooling to University, are in the show notes, so go check those out. And if today's conversation resonated with you, I want to invite you to join our community, Day in the Life. This is where families like yours are doing this learning life together. Doors will be open March 28th through 31st, so go ahead and get on the invite list so you're the first to know when doors open. The link is in the show notes too. Thank you for listening. I look forward to connecting again soon with you in our next episode. Until then, take great care.